This is a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.
Right, hello. Are you ready to get your mind blown? I mean, I'd hope so. You've come to the right place. This is the Fun Kids Science Weekly. My name's Dan. Thanks for giving us a listen. This is the show that unravels all the secrets of the universe. And this week we talk about some of the most mean, cruel and cunning beasts that are in the sea. Also, following on from that, we'll chat to a proper ocean expert all about how they try to keep some sea creatures safe. And we'll chat about the origin story of something that you use every single day, but probably have never given a second thought to how amazing it really is. That's on the way. First, let's take a trip to the smartest school outside the solar system.
Deep Space High, Spaceports.
Okay, everyone at Deep Space High, I'm ready to transmit my presentation on spaceports. You're gonna love it. Transmitting in 3, 2, 1. Have you ever imagined being an astronaut, experiencing weightlessness as you orbit the Earth, maybe visiting a neighbouring planet? Now, obviously, we're pretty lucky because we get to go to Deep Space High. But check this out. In the near future, everyone on Earth might have a chance to go into space and fly in the same way as they travel by air from airports. All thanks to spaceports. Just imagine a holiday on Jupiter, a trip to the moon and back, or maybe just a short flight to the edge of the Earth's atmosphere. These all sound like really cool things to do, right? Well, there are a lot of people who would agree with you about that. Even though there are over 7 billion people on Earth, only around 550 men and women have ever gone into space.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
For decades, space exploration has been run by governments, so members of the public like you and me haven't really had a look in. But things are set to change. You might have seen on the news that there are commercial companies developing technology to offer suborbital flights for ordinary people. Well, ordinary rich people at the moment. One is a company called Virgin Galactic, which is owned by a guy called Richard Branson. Another is SpaceX. It's owned by someone called Elon Musk. You might have heard of him. He is also behind the Tesla electric cars. In fact, there's a whole bunch of companies working on ways to get people into space. Commercial space launches are already taking place all the time across Earth, but most don't involve people at all. Some will be carrying astronauts and supplies to the International Space Station. Others are taking satellites into orbit around Earth. Satellites are very important to everyday life on Earth. They deliver TV programs and send us coordinates for our sat-navs. They also undertake scientific experiments, like monitoring the Earth's atmosphere. Now, one big problem facing any launch, whether for people, supplies or satellites, is that you need a lot of power to get out of the Earth's gravitational pull. And you can't launch from anywhere. You need special spaceports. At the moment, there aren't any spaceports in my home country, the UK. And you have to go to America and Russia, or further afield to Australia and Brazil to hitch a ride. That can take a long time and cost a lot of money. It would be much simpler and cheaper if space companies could send up their spacecraft closer to where they're built. And this is where things are changing. The British government wants the UK to be the first country in Europe from which commercial flights can be launched. Now, what spaceports look like and where they'll be are questions which haven't been answered yet. But I'll be giving you the lowdown on it all in my amazing presentations on Spaceports UK. Uh-oh, losing the connection. Catch you next time.
Deep Space High, Spaceports. With support from the UK Space Agency. Find out more at funkidslive.com/space.
Remember, if you've got any sciencey question rattling around your brain that you just need the answer to so you can actually sleep at night, let me know. I'll sort it for you. You just need to leave it for me as a review over on Apple Podcasts. Find the Fun Kid Science Weekly, drop us 5 stars and you name it. So simple. Luella from London has done that. She is 7 years old. Thanks for this, Luella. You ask, where did water first come from? It's quite a complex answer, Luella, so bear with me. The chemical makeup of water is H2O. So for it to form, you need to take two hydrogen atoms, one oxygen atom, and then when they meet, you get water. Now, scientists think that water first formed in the universe after lots of hydrogen was made during the Big Bang. And oxygen is constantly being created by nuclear reaction in stars. And when these meet in the cold of space, especially when this happened right at the start of everything, you know, when everything was going on all the time after the Big Bang, the atoms, the hydrogen, the oxygen met, and that's how water was formed. Now, on Earth, 71% of our planet's surface is water, and the oceans hold 96.5% of all of the Earth's water. Now, although they're not absolutely sure, the scientists think that the water came to Earth from asteroids coming into contact with the planet when it was first being formed. So all of the water that we just spoke about, that it was made in the cold of space, well, when the Earth was being made, asteroids came into contact with it, and that's why we've got the water. There we go. Thanks for the question, Luella. Also, hello to Tommy. Hey, Tommy, who is seven, who asked something that's probably more history than science, but we'll plough on with it anyway. Who invented the car? Well, Tommy, this is easy, but it's quite tough to go through. You see, there are lots of theories as to who invented the car. No one can exactly pinpoint the first idea for it, because automobiles and engines, they've cropped up throughout history. Even Leonardo da Vinci, back in the 15th century, had like early sketches for a car type thing. Henry Ford made the first mass-produced production line car, but historians think that Carl Benz from Germany created the first true automobile, which was powered by gasoline and internal combustion, and that was back in 1885. Thank you very much, Tommy. If you've got a science, or it turns out history question, that you really want answered on the show, you need to leave it as a review for the Fun Kids Science Weekly over on Apple Podcasts. It's the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, Sea Life in Brighton in the UK, it's announced a new renovation to create the first ocean experience of its kind in the country. And Joe Williams is a lead aquarist there, and he can tell us more. Hey, Joe.
Hi.
Joe, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly. Now, this new renovation, it's cost quite a lot of money, but there's a lot going on. So tell us a little bit more about why it's the first ocean experience of its kind in the UK.
Well, we're giving all our visitors a really unique opportunity to be able to see our animals in both how they would act in the day and the night period. So almost giving them a 24-hour experience of what's in the ocean. So something we've just released is the theme of it to the public, which is day and night. So you start your journey in the day section, and as you wander through, see all our lovely animals, you end up in the night section and get to see how some animals would act in a more darker period.
And without giving the whole point of the new renovation away, what are the changes in how some creatures do react between the day and the night?
Well, it's different for different animals, really. So, for example, a turtle will spend a long part of its evening resting. So a turtle, for example, could sleep for about 4 hours at a time on just one breath. They slow their heartbeat down, so it only beats one beat per minute, which allows them to hold their breath for that whole entire period. So you might see one of our green sea turtles, Lulu or Gulliver, having a little snooze in the night section.
Now, which is fascinating, but turtles, you know, they're quite slow creatures anyway. What's for you, Joe? What's the biggest difference between one creature in the day and what it does in the night? Like, what's the biggest change between their behaviour?
Sleep, how we know it as humans, is a debated thing in some animals, especially fish, because a lot of fish don't have eyelids like we do, so you can't necessarily tell whether they're sleeping or not. But sharks, for example, do most of their hunting behavior in the nighttime, which you wouldn't normally see in the daytime. That's mainly for the reef sharks. So they will go around and hunt in all the crevices to find their food. There are other types of fish that do really weird things, like they'll cover themselves in mucus to protect themselves from those types of sharks. So the sharks basically can't sense them.
Now, what's the first thing, Joe, that you have to think about when you're making a new home for a sea creature? Like, when you're designing something for a whole wide range of animals, what's the first, technical difficulty that maybe comes into your head?
Well, we need to make sure all the animals that we want are compatible, but we also just need to make sure all their welfare needs are met. They're, you know, we wouldn't create something that would be in any way, shape or form bad for any animal. So it needs to be as natural as possible for them. So as soon as you decide to create an exhibit, there are 1,000 sort of fireworks that go off in your head at one time. Oh, I need to think about this and I need to think about this. It's why there's a big collection of a team of people that have come together to make this brand new exhibit.
You said compatibility there. Which creatures don't tend to live well with each other?
Well, you kind of have to think about how an animal would live in the wild. So, for example, if we were making an octopus exhibit, a lot of octopuses don't live or cohabit within a small space to one another. They could potentially fight. So we wouldn't then make an exhibit for two octopus of a certain species, let's say. There are some octopus species that can live together, but more typical than not, just one on its own.
Now, you've got the sea turtles, Lulu and Gulliver. Lulu's 79 years old.
Yeah.
Now, my gran is pretty old. She's just a bit older than Lulu. And, you know, she takes quite a lot of looking after. People need to go and see her all the time, things like that. What's it like with Lulu? Like, when a turtle starts to get old and when other sea creatures do start to age, how does that change the way that you have to help them?
Well, it's basically different for each animal. So, for example, Lulu, you mentioned Lulu, they have a lifespan that's similar to humans. However, I think she's still as young and sprightly as she ever was. She's very affectionate. She doesn't necessarily need more looking after in her older age, but there are other creatures that maybe have a shorter lifespan that when they do come to their older age, you can maybe see the effects some more. Obviously, they don't get grey hairs or white hairs or wrinkles on their skin, but there are other things that you can see, especially, you know, we work quite very, very, very closely with the animals. It's almost like knowing when your cat and your dog gets old. You can see subtle changes in them that maybe other people couldn't see.
And you've got 840 sea creatures there. Did you have like a hit list of the ones that you really wanted? Did you mind map all the creatures that it would be great to get in the new exhibit? How did you figure out which creatures, and I mean, you've got a lot, 840, but how did you figure out which ones you were going to be able to get?
Well, we had to think. Some of us did have a wish list, yes, but some things aren't always realistic. We have to mainly think about the animal itself, whether it would be comfortable in the space that we're creating for them, but also how they could work in the day and the night section. So, for example, we have some cave-dwelling fish that have really big eyes because they've adapted and evolved to be able to be in levels. So they should be occupying the night period. There's a lot of thinking that goes into what goes where and who can live with who and who will be friends with who, basically.
And I mean, this is a really basic question, really stupid of me, I'm sorry about this. Where do you go to get these animals? Like, what do you do? If I wanted to start an aquarium tomorrow, I had a list of all the creatures that I wanted, what would I do? Who would I ring so they would, you know, pitch up a shark to my door?
It's not always as simple as that. I mean, we, as the aquarium industry, are almost like a community. If we want something, we reach out because there are a lot of breeding programs that go on within the aquarium community. So, for example, some of the sharks that we have will be coming from other aquariums throughout the UK and from Europe that have been captive bred, and they will then come to us. So it's not always a simple answer, and it takes a lot of time and maybe head scratching, let's say, but some things are simpler to get than others. Yeah.
What's your favourite creature that we'll be able to see down at Sea Life Brighton?
I don't think I could pick a favourite.
No, Joe!
Because that would be like picking my favourite child, you know.
Right, okay.
I have always had a soft spot for marine turtles. And it's normally that Lulu is everyone's favourite. However, Gulliver, her partner, tends to be more my favourite just because he's a bit more like me in the sense of he's a bit, at times, grumpier and a bit. He wants his own space.
Lovely. I don't think I've ever met a sea turtle, and I've swum with some who don't appear to be a little bit grumpy. So I'm fully with Gulliver there. Brilliant. Joe, thank you so much for coming on the Fun Kids Science Weekly.
You're welcome.
Hello there, I'm George, and I'm here to tell you all about the Fun Kids Download. It's a podcast you can get from wherever you get your podcasts. This week, I'm joined by animation royalty, not actual royalty, but the stars of How to Train Your Dragon 3, plus author Anne-Marie Howe, who's chatting about her brand new book. If you're lucky, you might even get a yes-no game. That is the Fun Kids Download. Get it from wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for this week's Dangerous Dan, where we talk about some of the meanest and the most cruel things in the universe. And today, it's come through as a suggestion from Fun Zombie, who is in London. They left us a review again over on the Apple Podcast Store. They left us a question right at the bottom. It said, could you do a Dangerous Dan all about killer whales? Because they eat sharks, you know. To tell you the truth, Fun Zombies, I didn't actually know. So I thought, really, I've got to investigate this. Now, killer whales are actually called orcas. They're the largest member of the dolphin family. They're jet black. They've got a white spot over an eye. They've got incredibly strong teeth as well, these powerful jaws with an expert grip for catching, for holding food. They're about 6 metres long. They weigh over 6 tonnes as well. And it's one of the fastest marine animals, swimming over 30 miles an hour. They're found in seas all over the world, and they're apex predators, which means they're kind of top of their food chain. They've got no natural predators themselves. They normally eat fish, birds, sea turtles, and also, it turns out, sharks. Killer whales are known to feast on bull, tiger, hammerhead sharks, and recently, it turns out, great white sharks. You see, the bodies of 5 of them were washed up on the beaches of South Africa, and they all had bites in exactly the same place on their pectoral fin, and the liver was missing. It had been chewed out. Now, scientists knew that this must have been caused by something smart, something cunning, something brave, and something obviously huge. I mean, it's a great white shark that's been found dead. So they think the only thing possible to do this is a killer whale. They are properly living up to their name, aren't they? They've got to go on the Dangerous Dan list. The orca, the killer whale. Amazing. Thank you so much for suggesting it, Fun Zombies. It's the first Fun Kids Science Weekly of a brand new month. It's May, we're getting into summer, the sun is going to be out, it'll be baking hot. So I thought it was important to catch up with one of our favourite geniuses over at Fun Kids HQ to learn the type of things that we need to take care of in the sun.
Halex's Hydration Help Desk. Call accepted.
Hello, Professor. I know we need water to survive, but why? What do our bodies want with all this water?
That's a great question. Water is absolutely vital to our survival. You can go without food for a number of weeks, but only a few days without a drink. And that's because we humans are made of so much of the stuff. 60 to 70% of our weight is water. It's in every cell of the body. Isn't that right, Nanobot?
It certainly is, Professor. Blood is over 90% water. The brain, heart and muscles are 75% water. Skin is 65% water. And even bones, which we think are very dry, well, they're 30% water.
And the younger you are, the higher those percentages are. Let's see some of the work water does. Water in the body's cells help to carry nutrients around, and to also remove waste products. And because the waste ends up, well, you know where, we constantly need to replace the water in our bodies. Did you know we lose water when we breathe out? The misty water vapour you see in the air on chilly days is tiny drops of the stuff. Another important job water does in our bodies is to help keep us at a comfortable and healthy temperature. If our bodies get too hot, our brains instruct our bodies to start to sweat. These water droplets on our skin take the heat away as they evaporate, which helps us to cool down. That's why you might get thirsty when it's particularly hot. You're losing all that water in your body through your skin. If it's super hot and you're using lots of energy, you could lose as much as a litre every hour. That's why it's important to drink regularly. Right. Got any other facts for us, Nanobot?
Of course. I'm a positive well of watery wonderment. Some species of turtles and toads have special bladders which can hold water for many months, even years. This way, if the animal becomes short of water supplies, it can absorb water back from these special pockets.
Amazing, but we're not turtles or toads and we can't store water for that long. Because of the way our bodies work, we need to drink water frequently for us to stay in good health. And here are two terms we're going to be using a lot on the help desk.
Well hydrated and dehydrated.
When we have enough to drink, we are said to be well hydrated. And when we don't have enough, we're dehydrated. Hydration just means the amount of water in something. You might have heard grown-ups using those words. We'll find out more about them next time. Thanks for calling.
Alex's Hydration Help Desk, with support from the Children's Health Fund. Find out more at funkidslive.com/Hallux.
It's been quite a sea-themed show today, and there's more of that coming up in this, because it turns out it's been quite a busy week under the ocean. This is Science in the News. Now, oceans are thought to contain almost 200,000 different viruses. Marine viruses were found from the surface right down to 4,000 metres deep all over the world. Now, the microbes, most of them are harmless to humans, but they can infect marine life, giving viruses to whales and crustaceans. Also, a reporter said there's three times more carbon in the soil than the atmosphere, and climate change won't be stopped if we keep releasing it. Now, carbon is released from the soil into the atmosphere by deforestation and poor farming. And finally, carrying on with the sea theme, marine biologists have found a beluga whale with a camera on its body, and they think that it's a spy. It was found near the coast of Norway, and the GoPro that it had strapped to its chest has led scientists to think that it was put there by another government, a country, in the hope of snooping what's happening under the ocean all around the world. That is it for this week's Fun Kids Science Weekly. Thank you so much for giving us a listen. If you've got a sciencey question rattling around your brain, something that you need figured out, let me know about it. Drop it as a review over on Apple Podcasts. Find Fun Kids Science Weekly there. Leave us 5 stars. Drop your name as well. Right at the bottom, there's a box. Leave your question as a review. I will either find a proper expert in that field to answer it for you, or I'll do all the digging and explain it myself. Whilst you're on Apple Podcasts, it's one of the best places that you can hear all our brilliant Fun Kids Science series. They are there. They're at funkidslive.com. They're on our free Fun Kids app. And while you're on the app, have a listen to Fun Kids. It's the UK's children's radio station. You can hear us on there all over the country. We're also on your DAB digital radio and over at funkidslive.com.
So that was a podcast from the children's radio station Fun Kids. Listen on DAB digital radio across the UK or online at funkidslive.com.